You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome to the AME Radio Show, the show that is the voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys today. We have a couple of great guests coming up, and we're going to be just kind of going with the flow today because we don't really have much to talk about. But it is Saturday night, and that is not all right for fighting. Sorry, Elton John, you were wrong on that one. Anyways, guys, we got a lot of stuff that has been going on the AME Radio Show, television show, and magazine. And if you want to see what that is, check it out on www.theamemagazine.com. All the links to all of our outlets are right there, and you'll be able to see what we have coming up. Now, if you missed some of it, we have some new stuff that's on the magazine. We also have the red carpet premiere of The Little Mermaid, which is now on the AME television show, and we have a couple of great guests that we have signed coming up in the next couple of weeks here that you'll be able to hear on the AME radio show. And if you happen to miss any of them, they're there as well. And remember, you can get our links to our social media networks while you're there, so please do that. And you'll also be able to download our apps for the Android and Apple platform, whichever device you may have. It's completely free, so go do that. And there's also a link for our newsletter as well. So there's lots of cool ways to keep in touch with the AME experience. Okay, so I don't really have much to talk about, but I do want to stress one thing, especially for artists, because I know how it is. When you are doing something, you generally put your heart and soul into it 100%. That's what makes art so amazing. The problem with it is if you forget to take time for yourself, you drain yourself. I feel absolutely drained. I've done a lot of great things over the last couple of weeks, and I'm very excited. I have no regrets about anything that I've done or have not done. The only thing I do regret is that I have not taken any time for myself. I've been working almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, putting my heart and soul of everything I have into every one of these projects, and I feel shell-shocked. I don't even feel myself, and I don't like that feeling. It's a feeling that it's like a helpless feeling. And I'm trying so hard to get that back, but you know, I've been talking about balance for a long time now this year, and I'm kind of out of sorts again. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. You know, I kind of haven't been able to be around my family. I haven't been able to hang out with friends. I haven't been able to do a lot of things that I normally try to do. And now I'm just sitting here like a blob on a log, just trying to figure out what to do. And I think it's about time I take a little bit of time for myself and get myself back into shape, you know, because that's where you get your creative energy from. That's where you get all your great ideas. That's where you get your motivation, your inspiration, your passion that you put into everything. And right now I have none of that. I have absolutely none of that. And I'm gonna make that change. So that's my advice to you guys. If you haven't taken some time for yourself, even if it's just a day, do so. And it's very important. And I'm not talking about doing housework, and I'm not talking about doing regular work. I'm talking about taking a day for yourself where you're void of everything that you could possibly come in contact with. That will drain you of more energy. Go have fun. Explore. Hang out with friends. Do something. But just don't work. You know? Very important. All right, guys, so our guest that we have coming up today, we have Jeff Bosley. Jeff Bosley is a really cool individual. He's an actor who is doing about 6 or 7 new projects right now. So we're going to be talking to him about all of these projects. There's too many to name right now. And then we have Carrie Ferriman coming on. She is the host of Talk Tennis with Carrie. Now, you don't hear too much about tennis in the news as much as you do our typical sports like basketball, football, baseball, hockey, but that doesn't mean it's not as cool. I got to go see a real-life tournament. I think it was a Mercedes-Benz or a Mercedes tournament over in Carlsbad, California. great experience. I loved it. And you know what? I really wish they'd show more of it. You know, more of the single matches. You only see the Grand Slams, and I think that's one of the reasons why you don't get to enjoy it as much as the other stuff. But honestly, guys, this is a sport that I'm really excited to talk about. I've never talked tennis with anybody, so this is going to be a lot of fun. All right, so I'm going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have Jeff Bosley on the line. I think he's my new friend. Hopefully he's my new friend. And we had a great talk, and I have a lot of respect for him. So don't go anywhere. We're going to come back, talk to him about his projects and more. So we'll be right back after this.
I'm Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's Goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladdysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag and pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Allo, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. His name is Jeff Bosley. He has been doing a lot of work, and you're going to be seeing a lot of stuff coming out, which we're really excited to talk to him about. I don't know if we can cover all this in the time frame that we have, but we are going to list him. He's in Deserted. He's in Reaper Chapter 1. He's in Take Point, Backseat, Call of Duty, Black Ops 4, and Escape. And we're going to be talking about this and his career. So welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Awesome, Jason. Thanks. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I know you are a busy guy, and you got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, what is that, like seven stuff that you have coming out here in the next maybe 6-7 months?
Yeah, I was going to say, I should have you just walk around and introduce me more often. It sounds much more heavy. Quite an introduction.
Well, you know, my biggest question right now is, how do you sleep?
Oh, God, I get that all the time, and my friends and loved ones, most ones probably would like an answer to it, too. Honestly, to be, like, transparent, that's actually a thing I don't do well, not because I have insomnia or anxiety or PTSD. I'm actually very poor at that. I'm regimented about, like, when I go to bed, when I wake up. The problem is that window of sleep is really small. So I sleep about 9 p.m. to 3 a.m.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a catch-22 because my prior job helped and actually, you know, was encouraged, but, you know, and to be sustainable as a, you know, I'm in my 40s, it's not something you should do daily.
That's right. Well, I know. Yeah. I mean, I know that sometimes when you're shooting, you know, movies and stuff like that, it can happen at some weird hours of the night. You know, sometimes it's like 2 a.m. you could be up, you know, actually shooting the stuff. So, I mean, to have this many stuff, and I'm like, man, you know, do you just sleep like an hour power naps?
Unfortunately, sometimes. But, I mean, yeah, until you're The Rock or Hugh Jackman and you could tell them that you're resting, you know, that's kind of the catch-22 is if you're clawing your way up, there's a little bit more self-sacrifice, and with that comes rest.
Right.
You know, and so when you're still trying to become number one, you're not number one to other people. And so, you know, you might be on one film, like you said, shooting late at night, and another film that is completely unrelated, you might be shooting the next morning. And it's not like they talk to each other and say, you know, is Jeff Bosley staying late? We want to make sure he gets enough rest for us. You know, it's like they care about their project.
Right.
So if you choose to sacrifice yourself in your sleep, that's just the way it goes.
Well, you know something, you have to have a love for this to be able to put your body through this and, you know, get the weird sleep patterns. And obviously you do because you've been doing a lot of amazing work here. So what got you wanting to be an actor?
I mean, the short of it is I, when I was a kid, I just played like most little boys. I played pretend, and I was the guy that like played pretend too much. I would make a cardboard jet after I saw Top Gun, but I also put strings to a joystick I fashioned out of more cardboard. So when I actually moved the joystick, I actually had flaps that went up and down. You know, like I had to have my I had to make it so super realistic that when it came to playing actor in the real world, none of my family were really surprised, and it more or less just was seated in growing up watching movies. I've just been enamored with them. And, you know, I was raised in a practical world. My father was a physician, and I was kind of around that academia environment. So it didn't really occur to me to do something so risky as a career. And then after so many years and so many decisions and experiences, I just kind of said, forget it. Let's give it a try.
Well, having your father a physician and stuff like that, you go to him and say, "Hey, look, this is what I'm going to do with my life." Did you get a little bit? Did he sit there and say, "Well, oh, you know, I don't know about this because I know my grandfather would have done that to me."
Yeah, no son of mine. Yeah, he. I mean, it was interesting because, to my dad's credit, he wasn't that typical physician father. Like a lot of MD doctors, there is that cliche sometimes based on truth where they expect their kid to follow in their footsteps. And you know, to my dad's credit, I put him through the stress and misery of the military and firefighting. Mm-hmm. That he's like, "Oh, cool, you want to go play pretend? That's just way better compared to what you used to do." You know, so I think I basically had to raise the bar for me when I offered him a lower bar, or what could be perceived as a potentially lower bar, for him to go, "Oh, cool, bring it. This is easy compared to what you've done to me in the past."
Well, at least now, if you're going to be shot at, you're going to be shot at with blanks, not with real stuff, so he won't lose you.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, I mean, ironic choice of words as I'm at a shooting range.
Yeah.
So, for anybody listening, I'm not in South Central getting tapped. I think that all the time, too. I'm like, God, this is so much easier. You know, the backpacks aren't full of real gear. The backpacks are full of pillows, you know, and the guns are fake, and, you know, but I think the military helped paint a little bit of a picture of what, you know, true exhaustion can be. So now I'm like, oh, this is great. Wait, I get shot at with a fake gun and I get to go have really well-made food at lunch in air conditioning. This is great. This is the best world ever.
So, like you said, growing up, you were a movie buff. What was one of your favorite movies, and who were some of your favorite actors that inspired you to want to be in the field you're in today?
I would easily say all the Star Wars movies, definitely the Superman, and probably my first true movie where I wanted to emulate that character, and I can explicitly remember a very specific story, was when Indiana Jones. Mm. That captured the imagination of whatever age I was, I've since forgotten, of just pure pretend and fun, you know, and so as I grew up, I saw that Harrison Ford was the first one I gave a name to versus just a person on my TV. So Harrison Ford was always fun to watch because he entertained me as a kid, you know, Han Solo and Indiana Jones. And then as I grew older and got more into, like, typical guy blood, guns, and action, I totally dug Rambo and you know, and Stallone and all that. And, I mean, really, despite how much I want to do the job here in L.A. and, you know, in the cinema world, I'm still a movie fan. Like, you can put anything in front of me, and I'll watch it once just because I love movies. Mm-hmm. You know, and so as my career's gone on, I look at actors and people's career from, like, a business standpoint, you know, sometimes. But just from pure entertainment, you know, I just try to go back to the innocence of youth without thinking about paying the bills and marketing and branding and all that crap. You know, I just grew up loving those ones that took me away. You know, and at my age, Star Wars and Indiana Jones were the ones that took me away from reality. Not like my reality was depressing, but they allowed escape, you know, for 90 minutes just to go into a world of fantasy.
Yeah.
And any movie that does that as I'm older, I'm all for it. I don't care if it's Avengers or, you know, like I always use the example of, like, Tom Cruise in Magnolia. You know, I still am locked for 90 minutes. I don't care if some blow-em-up, shoot-em-up movie or some very good artistic dramatic movie. And so it's... I really want to, but hopefully really accomplished for something. You know, I'm not going to sit down and watch a Sex and the City remake or anything, but I'll probably watch almost anything.
Well, you know, you're talking about Harrison Ford, and I know when we talked a little while ago, you told me that you're a Disney fan for going to the parks. Now, have you ever been to the Indiana Jones Experience at Hollywood Studios?
No. Why do I not know this? This just goes to prove I work too much. I don't even know what's going on in my own backyard.
Well, it's basically like the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom, and you see Indiana Jones, and they roll the rock in front of him, and, you know, he all this fire goes all over the place, and then they take you to all these different things, so they show you how they shoot a movie, but it's based on Indiana Jones. So if you ever get here to Florida, I don't know if it's the one out there in California, but the one here in Florida has it. It is definitely a must-see, even though you probably know how they all do it anyways, because you've been behind the camera. But regardless, you know, it's a really cool experience.
Oh yeah, well I don't think they have Indiana Jones one here, but they do have ones that are so and so experienced, and I've heard that about them. So now I'm going to be a little bit more ambitious and checking it out.
Well, if you're an Indiana Jones fan, you have to come here to Florida at least to try this one down here.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, when I have the money to throw around, I will make a trip just to see this. I'm a complete sucker for that stuff. I'm the guy that goes into Disneyland here in California. Oh, you know. Like I said, I'm in my 40s now, and I'll be at the front of the line at the gate before they open the park. And the first ride I run to is most 9 times out of 10 the Star Tours or whatever it's called now, Hyperspace, Star Wars one or the Indiana Jones one. Like, I run to those, kicking kids out of the way. I don't care. Those are my favorites.
I'm the same way. I sit there like, I'm ready.
Yeah, it's not my fault you have short legs, kid. You know? Game on. the parks are ruthless, man.
They are ruthless. They are. I know that feeling exactly. And it, like I said last time, we went to go try that new Toy Story ride, the Slinky Dog Dash, and I gotta say that was fun.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting it.
That.
And the funny thing was is that me and my wife got to it, and we had a 6:30 a 6 o'clock dinner reservation, and then we had a 6:30. Fast pass for that. So literally, we just got done eating and we went on a roller coaster. I'm like, never being on a roller coaster, you don't know what to expect. So we didn't know what to expect, but it was fun.
I was going to say, you probably could expect your food a second time.
Yeah, see if it tastes better the second time around.
Good for you. Yeah, it's good for you. Like, it's so funny, the parks, how they can bring out, you know, I still can get lost in Disneyland and how they pump the certain smells. You know, if you can get lost in it and ignore the heat and the fact there's a million people there and it's about 300 degrees, you can still get lost in it. But it's so funny how it gives you blinders, tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You're like, I know I'm getting on a roller coaster. That makes no sense, but I'm still doing it anyway. I'm in a park and I will do these things. You know?
It is. And you know what was funny about it, because we didn't know what to expect, it literally is just like a little bit of the Expedition Everest with the rock and roll roller coaster and the other one that they have out there, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, all together in one. Because literally, when you start off, it goes 0 to 60, but it doesn't go 0 to 60 on this one because it's a smaller ride, so it goes from like 0 to 30, and then you go straight down this big huge ramp. And so that's kind of like the Expedition Everest, and then you kind of go backwards a little bit like Expedition Everest, but then you come to a dead stop again, and you go straight up this hill, and you think you're going to go straight down this hill, but you don't. It's more of an incline. So it's got a lot of their three roller coasters together. But I kept my lunch down, which was good.
Yeah, definitely. I've only seen one person puke, and it was on the carousel. What is it? The big wheel, the big thing that just basically goes in a circle.
Yeah.
I forgot what those are called. Yeah, I saw somebody puke on that. That threw me off. So, knock on wood. Hopefully, neither of us puke today.
That's right. So you have got some really cool stuff coming out here, and I know a lot of it's in post production. Some of it has been completed. I don't know exactly when they're coming out, but kind of tell us a little bit about these movies that we talked about that you're in, and when they're coming out, what your character was.
Well, I was trying to go jump the Call of Duty one. I mean, all the extensive study I've done in acting, it was just a kick in the pants to literally dress up like a comic book character to play for 10, and then now, next thing you know, I'm in a video game, which is just surreal to me. I play like a character named Nomad. I run around with a, if you play Call of Duty games, they'll have like a special skill.
Mm-hmm.
All the other guys have like a cool bomb or a cool ninja move. I have a dog that I just stick on people. I just release a hound. And so I was just kicking the butt. It was just weird to say, hey, I'm in a video game now. Then that's just weird now that advertising's coming out. I see stuff rolling through Instagram, you know, like sponsored ads by Call of Duty, and there's my weird digitized mug on the screen. I'm like, oh my God, I got paid to play a video game, basically. And then, like, other ones, like the biggies, if you will. Like, I had some stuff, like a couple scenes with Christian Bale, and it's called Bass Seat. He plays Dick Cheney. It's like a Dick Cheney biopic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just stellar because it's always cool to be, even if you're like, I've got a point in my career where it's hard because it's such acting and all that stuff. It's like artistic and you want to just do it for the sake of doing it. But at the same time, you still want to, you know, you got to put food on your table and take care of yourself and your family. So you got to kind of make benchmarks. And I got to the point, luckily in my career, where my benchmark is to like have more meaty work, if you will. You know, I'm not, there's a difference between being indignant and also just kind of setting your own glass ceilings. And that was one where it's cool where I got like a smaller role, but it was to be on such a massive production with like Christian Bale and Judd Apatow. I met like a, this isn't name drop. It's just, I'm always amazed to be around these guys. Brad Pitt was producing it, and he was there the day I shot, and we talked like a nanosecond. And it was just cool to play a guy that's around Dick Cheney. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Christian Bale, you know? And that was cool. The one that I'm stoked for, and it's a serious, serious, serious passion project I shot before I made the gamble to move to L.A. It was the one you mentioned, Reaper Chapter 1, where the guy that wrote this, if you ever listen to this, I'm not insulting, but he, compared to me, he's a kid, and he's a guy, he's the kind of person that when you watch The Matrix, you're like, who took what drug to conceive this world? And how do they intermingle it together? And this is that kid that wrote The Reaper, this world. It's like it's got kind of an X-Files sci-fi drama action vibe to it. And I had to sit down with like a, if on screen it'll all make sense, but just when you read it in a script, it's hard to kind of visualize. Sometimes scripts don't do movies justice. And I had to like do a spider graph like some mass serial killer in my basement trying to figure out what was going on in this script. And I get the movie like I would want to see as a movie fan. Like, it's awesome. Fortunately, I'm like the lead guy. You know, we always brought a little backstory to it where the guy was a former Green Beret, you know, the turned reporter. So, and all these little adventures that ensue with like a bunch of conspiracy theories. And
mm-hmm.
We actually, he's wrapping that up. I actually had to go back like a year and a half later to do more scenes in Colorado. And they did that, and they're wrapping it up again. And it's one of those ones where it's underfunded for its scope, but he's compensating by the underfunding by just taking the time to do it right.
Sure.
He's not going to just hammer it out on a weekend and do some poor crap. He's actually putting his time in, and it should put some people on the map, or at least get some serious recognition. And I guess I should say, lastly, since we talked, actually, we pulled the trigger. Kind of like a kid that wants to play in the NBA, you know, you can only play like basketball in your driveway so much, and you can only play pickup games on the weekends. Sooner or later, you're like, I'm just going to do the best I can to emulate a 5-on-5 basketball tournament. And so I kind of got sick of it, and I pulled the trigger on executive producing like a feature length, and it's not easy. I would rather just show up and act. And my old roommates wrote a film called Deserted. And I just handed it to somebody to give me an idea of, like, hey, who could I hand this to basically ask for money? Because it's a weird little thing. Executive producers, I mean, some of them are very rich.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, their job is to ask people that have money to help them make a movie. So basically, I just go around whining a lot, looking for money to make a movie. And I gave the script to a guy to ask for help, and that guy happened to go, actually, we have some people that are very interested in this. That guy's wife was interested in the character. And, you know, kind of snowballed into a little money. I mean, we don't have Star Wars money by any means, but it's snowballed into enough money. We're like, you know what, screw it. We're going to do this. And it's a a cool murder mystery, but it's with a noir kind of spin to it. And we, the gunfire you hear in the background, actually I brought the lead actress, one of the lead actresses, to the range.
Mm-hmm.
This is the range. Like, if anybody's ever seen the viral video of Keanu Reeves training for John Wick 3, he trains here, and just through random circumstances, I've become friends with the people, and they've been so amazing enough for a guy that's not John Wick to come here and train. So we brought her here. She's never shot a gun. You know, we taught her how to use guns and get familiar with them. And it's, I play basically, without revealing too much, what do they call it? Like Reservoir Dogs, the cleaner, I think. The guy who cleans up other people's messes. And in that kind of fictional world, it's obviously pretty heinous and bloody. So
sure.
We start shooting that at the end of September. So we're pulling all stops where we can't put money in, you know, where we can't just throw money at the problem, like some bigger budget stuff. We're throwing our work ethic into it, you know, whether it be I'm dropping weight to look like the character me and the director wants, you know, and we're training this girl to help her, this woman, I should say, help shoot guns, calling in all the favors and doing everything possible to make it happen. And if anything, people will be like, cool, they did it. So we'll play that one by ear.
So with being in so many different movies and so many different characters and stuff, have you gotten the chance to play the character that you've always wanted to play? I mean, you got to have something deep inside that's like, man, I really wish I could get, you know, to play this character when I get older.
Go ahead.
What is that character if you haven't played it? And if you have played it, what is it?
I would kill, metaphorically, to play the Punisher in a big screen, done right version of the Punisher. I'm not going to knock or disrespect any people that have paved the way on the Netflix or on previous feature films, but that would be my dream. That's the little kid wants to do it right, former military movie maker, fan, nerd comic book guy role I would kill for. I've done roles a lot like it, you know, where you can add a little element of superhero-ness to them. Prior to the military, I trained in theater for 5 years, and so I try to always find, like, ways. I mean, you want to enjoy what you do, obviously, mm-hmm. but sadly, if I'm playing some effed up, like, God forbid, pedophile or something like that, you find a way to do it and enjoy it, as weird as that sounds, but that would be the one that's just purely selfish. If somebody said, Jeff, you're the Punisher in the next movie, I wouldn't have to reach to, I'm like, oh, how am I going to like this? I got that one. I like that one. But like the one in Reaper was fun because I got to play kind of the hero, but it was the hero you wouldn't expect. Like, it's fun to play what people don't expect. So, because I mean, I'm a bigger guy. I'm like 6.5 feet tall. Depending on what role I have a lot of muscles, you know. And so, like, people assume I'm like going to play the superhero, and it's kind of nice to play the fragile characters or the ones that you don't see coming. And so I've luckily got to tap into everything, even like bad guy stuff. I mean, I haven't straight up played. It'd be fun to be challenged with a role kind of like Heath Ledger's Joker,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's to force a role to exist that doesn't exist just for the sake of an actor ego, that, you know, that would just be a failure in my opinion. But it sounds so cheesy, but if I get to act, that's all I care about.
Sure. You know,
the other ones are dreams. I think I'm watching Avengers Infinity War for like the third time, and it was just released the other day. Like, if I look at those, I'm like, oh my god, what I would do just to play comic book character. Like, what a world.
I hear you. Well, unfortunately, we are about out of time. This time just completely flew by, but I was having so much fun. But so, go ahead.
I'm all hopped up on caffeine, intense sunlight, not enough water and guns, so I'm rambling.
No, you're fine. I had a lot of fun with this, but since we do have to wrap it up, kind of tell everybody they can see you, where they can find out more of your movies, follow you, social media, whatever you have.
I'm honestly, fortunately, pretty easy to find. It anything is Jeff Bosley or the Jeff Bosley. I like one day I was like, well, I'm supposed to emulate others' careers. So what's Hugh Jackman do? Oh, he goes by the Hugh Jackman on social media. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll be the Jeff Bosley. But other than that, I don't have any Wazoo, you know, /__. It's all Jeff Bosley on, you name it, it's Jeff Bosley. My website, luckily, I got jeffbosley.com. I'm pretty active. I try to find that fine line between, like, I want to like inspire people that are trying to do something wazoo and hard with their life through what I do, but I also try not to be presumptuous and come across as arrogant. So I try to find a sweet line of interacting with people on social media and inspiring, but also realizing where I stand in the scheme of rank in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm as active as I can be, and I try not to be presumptuous, but I'm pretty much anywhere and everywhere. IMDb, I'm the only Jeff Bosley, and I do my best to not be hard to find, which is contrary to my former military career where we had fake Facebook accounts. Now I'm the exact opposite.
Well, Jeff, this has been so much fun. I'm so glad you're able to do everything that you're loving to do, and you have so much stuff coming out. That's always a blessing. And I wish you all the best, and if you come down to Florida and you want to go and have somebody come with you to Disney, I'm all for it. So,
Don't even joke. That stuff, I will take you on that, and I just won't eat before we go like you did.
Well, please keep me up on that. I would love to be able to go down there and spend some time with you down there and talk movies along the way. But, again, thank you for coming on. This is fun.
Absolutely. It's been an honor. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate your time.
No problem. All right, guys.
Take care, buddy.
Oh, no problem. Guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have more, so don't go anywhere.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop at Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is @DowStudios. And Instagram is @JasonDow. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hi, it's Maurice Bernard. You're listening to the AME Radio Show. Strike the pose.
Strike the pose. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. Her name is Carrie Fairman, and she is the host of Tennis Talk with Carrie. And, you know, we've never had anybody here on the show that's actually talked tennis with us. So this is going to be a lot of fun because I've had some experiences with some tennis. I've tried playing it. I'm no good at it, but I do love the sport. So welcome to the show, Carrie. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much, Jason. I'm doing very, very well, and I'm honored to be the first one to come on and talk about tennis.
Yes, you
are.
One
of my favorite things to talk about.
Well, I love to be able to talk about that for sure, because I think it's going to be a lot of... It's something that, you know, we don't see a lot of it. It's not like your mainstream baseball, football, and stuff like that. So it's one of those sports that I think everybody can like, and it's a fun sport. It's a competitive sport, and, you know, it's different from our mainstream sports, but yet it still has that dignified notoriety. I mean, it's got the support of the Queen. I mean, how much bigger can you get, right?
Right. It really does. You know, especially starting off with Wimbledon as the first big tournament, and yeah, it's definitely got that prestige and that air about it for sure.
Now,
it's a great sport.
Did you get into tennis from playing it? I mean, is this kind of how you got your background in it?
Yeah, so I mean, I was playing tennis basically out of the womb. My parents were big tennis players, and then my brother, who's 6 years older than me, was a big tennis player. And as the little sister, I wanted to be just like him. So I played tennis as far back as I can remember. I mean, let me tell you how I was in the 12s. No, I'm kidding, in the 12s and 15s. But I still play a lot today. But I did grow up playing tennis competitively, and then I played very competitively in high school. Then kind of had that decision of whether or not I was going to go on to play in college, and ultimately decided not to. Just at 18 years old, my head just wasn't 100% where it needed to be. I wanted to kind of have that college experience, and so I didn't go through with that, although I did make the D1 team. Mm-hmm. So after college, I kind of put a little bit of a halt to it until I, you know, graduated and went further in my adult life and then got back into it, circled back. But yeah, I grew up playing, so that's where it comes from.
So for people that may not know the sport too well, I mean, like I said, mm-hmm. it's not your baseball and your football where you know how everybody ranks. How do you get ranked in tennis?
Yeah, so tennis is really unique in regards to that because it's a points scale. So you have to win tournaments to get points, and there are different levels of tournaments, and based on whatever level of tournament you're playing, which it also, you have to be in a certain ranking bracket, here's the caveat, to get into certain tournaments, it depends on how many points you're going to get. So, like the Grand Slams, for instance, the Wimbledons, the U.S. Open, the French Open, the Australian Open, those ones are the most. And then you'll go down to the majors like Indian Wells, the Miami Open, and then you get the second most points and then so on and so on. And there are just tons of tournaments that trickle down that ladder. And as you get lower, or I'm sorry, I should go, as you get higher, you get more and more points. But then also, you can't just be anyone and get into Wimbledon. So you have to be top 100 to get into a slam, and then you can play qualifying rounds to make those like few slots that they will allot at the very end. But if you're, you know, low on the totem pole, low in the rankings, like you got to play those lower division tournaments to get those points and work your way up. Mm-hmm. And so it's not easy. It's a tough sport. It really is.
Yeah, cause
I admire those athletes that are just keeping at it. You know, the ones that are in the lower hundreds but just still grinding. It is tough.
So it could be detrimental if you got injured and you were ranked really high because you could easily probably get knocked way down and have to start from scratch all over again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Andy Murray is like, what is he, in the 600s now or something? So, but with that, because of someone like him, for instance, who had such a high ranking and then got injured and had to withdraw for a while to recover, it's not his fault, and so tennis does take that into consideration. And so he comes back with kind of, he still will get into the slams and get into the tournaments and get, like, the wild cards and those kinds of things because of his prior status and his prior rankings. But, yeah, if you're not something, but, yeah, if you get injured, it can be very, very detrimental to your career. That is absolutely correct.
And as a person that loves stadiums and arenas and stuff, and I've kind of studied all these types of things that go into the atmosphere of each sport, yeah, obviously because how the stadium's built, the thing that I think that's most fascinating is that there are different types of courts that people play on. I think you got carpet, you have hardtop, you have clay and grass. What are the differences that those cause the individual player to have to maybe work around?
Yeah, so the main surfaces are going to be, yeah, the clay, the hard court, the grass. They do make courts in all sorts of things, but that's generally what the competitive tournaments are going to be on. I'm sorry, you asked the difference between the different surfaces?
Yeah, what does it do to the ball, or how does it speed up or slow down the game?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes a huge difference in regards to just the athletics as well, running back and forth. On hard court, it's a lot easier to grip the court, you know. On clay, if you watch the players, you have to know how to slide in order to play on clay. So you'll see them sliding left and right, or, you know, forwards and backwards to get to the balls. And that is really a completely different skill than playing tennis on a hard court. So the movement is definitely very different. And then with grass, it also can get a little bit slippery as well, because, you know, naturally grass just gets a little bit slippery. But, yeah, the speed is a lot more on clay and grass. And it's going to, you know, the speed definitely will, sorry, it impacts the movement. I'm sorry, I got a little distracted. My dogs are following me around. They're at my feet here for this interview. They obviously want to be on the show too, Jason. And they're distracting me. So, anyways, yes, the different surfaces affect the movement greatly and then definitely affect the speed of the ball as well. Like on clay, it's going to be a fast-moving ball. On hard court, it's going to be a little less than the clay, but it's still going to be fast nonetheless. And then on grass, it tends to pick up. In grass, you never really know. It can go either way, honestly. Sometimes you can hit a spot that's going to throw it off, but then sometimes it can be nice and sleek and add great speed to the ball as well. Mm. So,
Well, that's interesting. You know, I mean, just how one little element can have such a major impact on the ability for you to play a game, and to have to know that. Honestly, that's an athlete to me. If you can work on all those different surfaces and see how they react, and still manage to win, you know, Grand Slam championships and stuff like that through all those differences, you know, that's a hell of an accomplishment. You have to be an athlete to know that.
Oh yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think tennis players are just such admirable human beings, because they have to be so smart, and they have to adapt to so many different situations, and they have to really endure a lot to make it, like a ton, to, you know, to make any money, really, and to make it and to be known in the industry. So, yeah, absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
And what's even cooler is, you know, when you see people like football players or baseball players, you know, they wear cleats. These guys don't wear cleats on the clay or on the grass. You know, they're doing it just with regular sneakers like we wear. And that definitely has a difference in how they can maneuver. And I'm sure it can also put a lot of pressure on their ACLs and other things for injuries as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they obviously need the speed, so they can't wear the cleats. But for sure, injuries are very prone as a result of exactly that. Slipping, sliding, falling, and landing on your wrist or twisting your ankle. Those kinds of things happen all the time in tennis.
You know, growing up, some of the people that I watched a lot were like Jimmy Connors and Chris Everett and Martina Navratilova and all those guys, and Andre Agassi. And, you know, Andre Agassi was kind of like the rock star to the sport. It's kind of like Happy Gilmore for the video for golf. He was the rock star for that. Well, Andre Agassi was pretty much the rock star for this, but he kind of changed the way tennis has been perceived since then, because it's like, everybody started wearing his type of clothes, and you know, he changed the rackets, and he made it modern, I think.
I mean, Andre Agassi has definitely had a huge impact on the sport. Absolutely. I mean, even just from the clothes and his personality. You know, the hair is so famous. You know, the back in the day, long Andre Agassi hair mullet type thing he had going on. You know, and not being quite as traditionally conservative and making it okay to show some personality on the court. It's okay to get frustrated with yourself, so that it's okay to, you know, like, even root yourself, you know. In the past, it started as such a traditional, very conservative thing. And so, yeah, he really helped, you know, start that influx of players, you know, bringing a little bit more oomph to the game, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more pizzazz.
And also, what I've seen a lot of is the perception of females in the sport. I mean, when it started off, you had your traditional people, but then you have people like, you know, Venus Williams and Serena Williams that come in there and have dominated. I mean, it's literally it got to the point where every tournament, every Grand Slam, it was those two, and they seemed to be the only ones that could take each other out, which is pretty intense. They did that for years. I mean, what impact did they have on this sport for women?
Yeah, I mean, well, Serena, you know, in particular, she just dominated for Venus dominated for a long time. Serena came in and just started breaking records left and right. And they've had a huge impact on the sport, because Serena has now won, you know, she's at 33 Grand Slam titles. You know, she's almost tied with Margaret Court's record, and so, you know, or actually did she tie? Wait, sorry. No, she's almost there, and so she's got, that's a huge record, and it's like she's just such a well-known force to be reckoned with in the sport that obviously she helped get women's tennis out there and get it known and get people really more attracted to the sport, people who weren't even necessarily interested prior, you know. Then they're like, well, who is this woman who is just dominating, and then it attracts attention to the women's side in general. So, of course, she's definitely had a big impact in the women's on the WTA, and then, of course, she's had a big impact for, I think, the African-American community as well. She's such an icon. She's like a hero. She's just such a great person to look up to, and I think she's had I think in life in general, she sends a good message, you know, that women can do whatever they want, and she's great things for her community that she grew up in. You know, she grew up in Compton, and she's really, like, done great things for that community, and again, for just the African-American community in general. And so, yeah, she's changed a lot of things not just the sport, the world.
Well, looking at all the players that have been in there and stuff, obviously you're going to always have your number ones turning over, number twos turning over. Who are the top five women and top five men players currently ranked in the United States or the world today?
Right. Okay. So Serena is not in that anymore because you know that she came back from pregnancy and got knocked down several spots from the rankings. So just like injury, you don't retain your ranking even when you're pregnant. And so she's down. She is not our number one anymore, and she actually hasn't been winning a whole lot lately. But we've got Simona Halep at number one. And then we've got, I believe, Caroline Wozniacki. I just want to make sure I get this right. Caroline Wozniacki at number two. Sloane Stephens at number three. Angelique Kerber, who held our number one spot at one point, at four. And then Caroline Garcia at five. I'm actually curious. Let's see what Serena has worked her way up to at this point. I think she's still relatively low, which is just crazy to think about after, especially what we just talked about, you know?
I know. But it's amazing how fast things can change. That's what's amazing about sports. It's like just when you think that you have it and they're unstoppable, something happens, and just in the blink of an eye, like you said, an injury could take somebody out of their first rank and knock them into like 55 or 60, and almost to the point where they're not even ranked anymore, and then they have to work their way back. And, you know, for those people that can do that and not let it take them out, that's definitely a credit to their their credibility and their athleticism.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think when she came back, she was in the 800s or something. You know, when Del Potro came back from injury, I think he got even lower than that. He was real, real low for a while. Now, same thing with Murray. So it looks like Serena's worked her way back up to number 26 because she did win some big tournaments, but she's been a bit inconsistent.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a big topic, too, not just injury, but the pregnancy thing.
Yeah.
That has been a huge debate in the tennis world. I mean, what do you think about that? I am always curious to hear other people's opinions about that. So basically, the thing is that when a woman has to leave the game for tennis, she doesn't retain her ranking. Mm-hmm. So just like injury. So they're basically relating it with injury. It's very controversial. I'm not even sure 100%.
Well, I think if they went about it in the right way, I think it could work. Because basically, when you're looking at NASCAR, you know, unless somebody's completely knocked out of it, they have that. They lose. They pretty much keep their rank for a little bit, and then they can come back in. Or sometimes they lose it. They're like maybe four or five laps down, or something like that. It's nothing traumatic. I would think that they can't be lower than X amount of people, but they should have the ability to have that chance to try to regain that, but not knock them out of the running, like to the point where you're not even mentioned anymore. I think that would probably be a good scenario, because you can't sit there and tell somebody, you know what, you can't have kids, and if you're going to have kids, you're going to ruin your career here. You know, you've earned that, you've worked hard for it, and to sit there and want to have a family, that's just what anybody would want. You know, so I mean, I don't know why that would be a major problem where they would, you know, completely use it like an injury to where you're knocked down. Now, obviously, an injury, you don't know how fast you're going to come back, or how fast you're not going to come back, or even if you will come back. But something like this, I mean, unless she had like a seriously bad, you know, pregnancy where she may never even, you know, have complications for the rest of her life, then I don't see why they should knock her down that much, in my opinion.
Yeah. Luckily, they do protect their ranking in a sense that, you know, they'll give them the wild cards into the tournament because of their previous rankings, and they'll, you know, still hold some spots for about a year. But yeah, you know, it's still a massive climb back to the top.
Yeah.
And they're not going to hold those things for them forever. So yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So
I like to hear other people's opinions about it, because it's so, you know, it's so different what one person thinks to the next.
It is. I mean, I can see where some people would say, nope, you know what? It they're in the sport, they know this, and you know, it is a sport, it's competitive, everybody's competing on the same level, and if some, you know, why should somebody that isn't or does want to get pregnant right now be held back because this person did and they're ranked and you can't take their spot? So I can kind of see both sides of the tale, you know, but on the other hand, I still think it should be protected for a little bit. I mean, it is something that is optional, but they cannot sit there and keep you from wanting a family, I mean, and you know, destroy your career because you want one. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they definitely, yeah, help the first year, but after that, it's a little bit tough. And I'm with you. It's a tough one. That's the thing about tennis. A lot of different debates between that one, between the men and women's equal pay debate, between, you know, the separate divisions. Because that's actually the cool thing about tennis, for me at least, that, you know, there are combined tournaments that are both men, male and female tournaments. A lot of separate ones, but combined ones, you know, whereas it's very separate with the, you know, basketball or soccer or whatever, you know. You never see them playing in the same games, kind of, like, obviously not intermixed, but, well, actually, there's mixed doubles.
Yes.
So,
and those are always fun to watch. I like the mixed doubles.
Yeah, they are. Those tend to be more like entertainment sometimes, you know, the interactions, and it's fun. Doubles is a good time. It's a good time to watch.
So tell me a little bit about Talk Tennis with Carrie. What's this all about? Where can people hear it? And how frequent do you broadcast?
Yeah, so Talk Tennis with Carrie is a digital platform based on tennis. Surprise, surprise. And it's, you know, one day I, as a tennis lover, was kind of in a viewer. I was thinking about it, and I just felt like there needed to be a little bit more in-depth, you know, content about tennis. There's so much out there that gives you the facts and the stats and the scores, and especially these days with live streaming and social media, I mean, you can get the scores on so many different outlets. So, you know, like, let's know a little bit more. We don't really know anything. We didn't know anything about tennis players, about what really happens behind the scenes. What do they do in their free time, you know, when they want to just be social and be not athletes and just be human beings? And it's like that information was so, like, coveted and kept secret. And they want to talk about it, you know. Like, the players want to be themselves. They want to just be, you know, human beings, and they want people to know them. And there's so many amazing events that go on surrounding tennis. There was just so much that people don't know. And me as a viewer, I wanted to know more. And friends that I knew would always be like, oh, I don't really love tennis. It's a little boring. And I'm like, that's exactly what it's missing, that thing that will, you know, keep that avid tennis viewer like myself really interested in, you know, add a little bit of fun and spice, but then it'll bring in that viewer too that's like, I don't know, I can't follow it, and I just am not that interested. It'll bring them in, you know, by adding a little bit of entertainment, because, you know, I don't know a whole lot about football, but sometimes I like reading about what all these guys are, you know, gallivanting around doing, or, you know, whatever, or getting to know them more personally. If I see something about, you know, a Richard Sherman or something in the headlines and the tabloids, and then I get to, like, read a little bit more in-depth about him and his family and all of that kind of stuff, it's just, I feel more connected, even though I can't follow football, so it brings me in. I wanted to do the same thing with tennis, you know, like those sports that are more out there and are more involved in the community as a whole, not just the avid football lover, the avid baseball lover, that kind of a thing. Bring everyone in. Let's make it more fun, you know? We're not back in the you know, past centuries. We're in the modern day. We're 2018. Let's just stop being so tight-lipped, and let's break out a little bit, have some fun, get a little bit more in-depth than just the surface. Let's get more than the score.
Okay. So what would you tell somebody if their kids want to play a sport and they're not big enough for tennis, and I mean they're not big enough for basketball or football or something like that, maybe baseball, they're just it may not be the thing that they love. What about tennis? What are some of the things that they can get from tennis as children? Not only, you know, obviously athletic wise, but, you know, sports are always good for self esteem and other things. What can they benefit from tennis?
Yeah, so that's one of the really unique things about tennis as well, because it's an individual sport. It's not a team sport. So it teaches a lot of great life lessons. One of them, you know, it teaches you kind of independence and strength and how to kind of make it on your own, because you've got to hold your own. You don't have teammates there to back you up when you get tired, to, you know, hit the shot when you miss it, or if you're playing another, or whatever. You know what I mean. So it teaches you a lot of that kind of internal strength, you know, really get in tune with yourself. And I think in turn, when you build independence, you know, you build confidence. And those kinds of characteristics definitely carry over into everyday life, absolutely. I think that the way that I developed as an adult has a lot to do with my upbringing playing tennis, and I'm super grateful to my parents for having me playing as a young child. You know, and aside for that, the athletics of the sport, it's great fitness, and it's outdoors. It's just, it's a really wonderful, like, fun activity. You know, tennis is used actually for autistic children a lot. I work with some charities that work with autistic children, one being Acing Autism, and it was just such a cute name for it. And they do a lot of tennis activities and teaching the kids, and it's just incredible to watch them go from off the court to on the court, how they just light up, and they go from, you know, not really speaking to suddenly, like, you know, yelling and jumping around and playing with their peers. It really brings them out of their shell because it's such a exciting thing for them to go out and participate in, and it makes them feel accomplished and feel good about themselves. So, you know, I think that that says a lot about the sport, that not only is it so great for, you know, for an able-bodied and, you know, a regular human, it's great for kids growing up that, you know, have some issues. It's one of those sports that's like a healer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, yeah. I kind of missed the boat when earlier in the show, but I want to get this before we end up having to call it to a commercial. Have you ever been to a Grand Slam?
Oh, yeah, I've been to all of them.
Really?
Of course.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
What was your first one?
I go to the U.S. Open, actually, this Sunday. I get there a little early because I do a lot of events before the U.S. Open.
Oh, yeah.
My first one was the U.S. Open because my parents would take me and my brother to the U.S. Open as children. So very fond memories of that.
Then
my favorite, though, is probably the Australian. I love, love, love the Australian Open. It is just, Australia is incredible. Mm-hmm. And the grounds of the Australian Open are, I mean, just out of this world, what they've done with them. So exceptional. All of the installations and attractions that they've put in to kind of, like, do exactly what I just touched on earlier, too, you know, bring in a broader crowd and bring more people into this sport. But it's so fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grand Slams are a good time. I highly recommend you go to one if you haven't hit one yet.
Well, I definitely want to do that someday. That's on my bucket list. I would like to hit all of them myself. The most I went to was like a minor tournament. I think it was the BMW Mercedes-Benz Classic out mm-hmm. in Carlsbad, California, which was pretty cool. But I'd like to see one of those big ones someday.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to do it. It's an experience for the books.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carrie, please, we're running out of time, so please tell everybody where they can find out more about Tennis Talk with Carrie, websites, social media networks, anything else that you got to promote.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can find me on my website at www.talktenniswithcarrie, and my name .com, and my name is spelled K-E-R-R-Y. And then you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Carrie Lynn 36, and that's K-E-R-R-Y-L-Y-N-N-E 36. And you can get pretty much all the scoops on those two outlets.
Well, this has been so much fun, and honestly, I haven't had this much fun in a long time talking sports with anybody, so this is definitely refreshing. I definitely have to bring you back on. We're going to have to talk more tennis in the future here and see how things go. Maybe you can come on after the U.S. Open, and we'll discuss the U.S. Open.
Yo, yeah, I'll have tons to talk about after the U.S. Open because I go out there the week before and cover just a string of events of all those really fun things that I'm trying to get everyone to know about because they're so cool before even the tournament starts. So they have, like, a ping-pong tournament between the players. They have City Taste of Tennis, which is this awesome event with tons of food and chefs, you know, top chefs and master chefs, and it's awesome, and players. And so, yeah, I'll have tons to talk about and would love to.
Well, that would be fun. We'll definitely have to get you back on. And this has been so much fun, and I wish you all the best with Tennis Talk with Carrie. And
thank
just pursuing
so
what you love.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. I'm always here to talk some tennis. Love doing that.
Well, thank you again, Carrie. And, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have more, so don't go anywhere.
Hi, this is Jamie Lunner. You remember me from Melrose Place? I listen to AME Radio Show.
Welcome back, everybody. We're closing out the show. We will be back again next week. If you want to see where we are, all you have to do is go to our website or go to amfm247.com every Friday and Saturday. Every Friday and Saturday on wklap.com. Radio Love every Saturday night. iTunes, iHeart, and Phoenix Broadcasting On Demand. Good night, everybody.
That's the end?
We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.